All right, welcome. It is Bowerly on News Radio 930 WBEN. So along the way this hour, we're going to try to hook up with people involved in the school lawsuit. You heard Tom Puckett with the news about full-time in-school learning in 2 weeks, as long as the COVID rate stays to whatever. I suspect that's going to be after 5:30. As things have turned out. My intention this hour, and by the way, if you're just tuning in because you just got out of work, thanks a lot. I appreciate being a part of your day. I appreciate it very much and have for many, many years. This is the multiple regional Edward R. Murrow award-winning radio station. Anyway, WBEN. One of the things I wanted to talk about today was pests. And I was listening to David Bellavia this morning, and a guy called in and said his least favorite pest was the tick. And he said, I don't know if this is true, but he said, you pull a tick out of your body the wrong way and the head stays in the skin. And I thought to myself, ugh. And then I thought to myself, I promised Rebecca Roll, who is very involved in the issue of Lyme disease, L-Y-M-E, I promised her that I would spend some time giving her group a little bit of publicity. Lyme, W-N-Y, is the group. Lyme, L-Y-M-E-W-N-Y, because I wanted to talk about pests this hour. Exactly where this show is going to go this hour, I can't tell you because it is contingent on other people being lined up on the school thing. So just have a little patience with us. I shan't keep Rebecca waiting. Rebecca Roll with Lyme, WNY. I want to thank you very much for joining us. You're supposed to be my lead into pests. It may not work out that way entirely, but, radio is fluid and organic and stuff happens. First of all, what's new in the battle? Before we even get into that, for those who have only heard the term Lyme disease, who have no idea what it means or what the symptoms are or whether it's even taken seriously, would you educate people?
Well, that's a loaded question right there, which you wouldn't think it would be. But first of all, thank you for having me. And I love that you spelled it out a few times with Lyme, because it drives us crazy in the Lyme disease world when people say Lyme's disease with an S. So there's no S. You're right. It's just the L-Y-M-E, Lyme disease. Where have we gotten? Nowhere. We're just as far as we've been the past few decades, unfortunately. It's really interesting being in the Lyme disease world right now, especially with everything going on with COVID. It's actually a little bit infuriating sometimes, because we wish we would have gotten the attention that COVID has gotten over the past year.
And Lyme disease, as I recall, Lyme disease is caused by deer ticks?
Yes, it's caused by ticks, by deer ticks, yes. If you get bit by a tick that is infected with the bacteria and it bites you, then, you can in fact be infected with Lyme disease. And, I think, unfortunately, the problem with Lyme disease is it's still very much unrecognized in this area. And a lot of times the medical community in this area are still not kind of educated or up to date on the research that, how long a tick has to be embedded in you, that you just can't get it. Well, you live in Erie County or you live in Buffalo, New York. There's no way you could have Lyme disease.
We've got more deer in my neighborhood than you could shake a stick at.
Exactly. And really, deer aren't really so much the problem. It's rodents. It's mice. I mean, speaking of pests, it's mice. Mice are one of the biggest carriers, birds, any sort of small rodent, and they're traveling. And that's the major problem right now is you can't really control that population. And therefore, ticks are breeding and wreaking havoc in this area. 50% of ticks in Erie County are testing positive for Lyme disease. So if you get bit by a tick, you toss a coin and...
So let me just get this straight. You can empirically and follow the science, you can say that a tick is infected with Lyme disease, but a lot of physicians refuse to recognize Lyme disease as a legit ailment?
Absolutely, yes. I can't tell you on our end how frustrating it is. They treat a lot, and I'm not speaking on all doctors, but we've quite often hear, those advocates, they're crazy. They don't know what they're talking about. these doctors who treat Lyme patients, they're nuts. They just want to line their pockets. I think we have better things to do with our lives than make up an ailment or an illness. That research is backing this. And a lot of times patients who have Lyme disease or are mimicking Lyme disease or the illness itself are treated as if they're crazy. And it's 2021, and it boggles my mind to this day why it's so ignored. So.
Well, if one follows the science, there's no rational basis to be regarded as crazy if something can be measured. And, hey, that's Lyme disease. I want to talk about the symptoms coming up because, you know, whether you're 2 years old crawling around in the ground or whether you're 52 years old crawling around in the ground doing gardening perhaps, this could actually happen to you. We're talking with Rebecca Roll. And she's with Lyme, W-N-Y, L-Y-M-E, Lyme, as in Lyme disease, as in Lyme, Connecticut, where it was first recognized, I guess, as a malady. So what I know about Lyme disease, Rebecca, is what I've read and what I've heard from you. Lyme disease can make you feel, well, like crap.
It could destroy your life. I mean, it's not something that you did for 2 weeks. It's not something... You know, if you're lucky and you catch it early, you'll be fine. And if your doctor recognizes that and treats you properly and just doesn't throw one pill at you and say, here, you know, you're on your way, that's the case a lot of time. But if you get treated properly right away, and I think that's one of the things as an advocacy group that we really, really try to push is getting that treatment right away and that long-term treatment right away, you have a chance of being fantastic. You being okay, acknowledge that it's in this area, acknowledge that the possibility can be there, and you treat them, that person, you're fine. My husband was gravely ill, gravely, gravely ill, to the point where I wasn't sure if he was going to see the next morning at one point. He was 36 years old at the time. He could barely function. He went from probably one of the healthiest people I've ever met in my life to questioning if his children were going to know who their father was. That's how ill he was.
Right.
It destroys people's lives. It's not something that is, if you get it and it becomes chronic, it's not an easy fix. And there's not really any doctors in this area that are willing to treat patients who have chronic Lyme disease.
How long it takes between being infected by a Lyme disease carrying tick and the onset of symptoms?
I don't know the exact science. But I would say within a few days. I mean, again, I'm just speaking based on situations and other people's, you know, my husband, we don't know. And that's, I guess I should kind of rewind a little bit. A lot of times you don't know you were even bit by a tick. And that's the problem. A tick can be literally the size of a freckle, a period at the end of a sentence. And that's an nymphal tick. And those are the ones who are a lot of times are responsible for Lyme disease cases. And people have no idea that they were even bit by a tick, and then all of a sudden you're starting to feel ill. So it could be within days, it could be within weeks. Mm. And that's kind of a lot of the times the problem. Like, for example, my husband, and probably if I've met 1,000 Lyme disease patients in the past few years, 950 of them don't recall ever being bit by a tick. Do not recall being bit by a tick. And that's the problem then. You go to these doctors saying, oh, I have the flu, my body aches, I can't think, my vision, you know, there's so many problems. And, you know, then you start getting multiple diagnoses. And that's where the problem kind of comes in. And again, you'll go in and you'll say, well, I think maybe I have Lyme disease. Well, do you remember being bit by a tick? No, I don't remember being bit by a tick. Well, then it can't be Lyme.
Is there a blood test? If they can tell if a tick has Lyme disease, can they not tell if a human has Lyme disease?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that question again?
If they can tell if a tick has Lyme disease, can't they tell if a human has Lyme disease with a blood test?
Well, yeah, that's for sure. So if you get bit by a tick and you save your tick and you send out your tick for testing, we actually have some different labs that we recommend right on our website. And if you are lucky enough and you see that tick engorged and you have that tick and you remove it and you send it out either, you know, you can send it out through the health department, you can send it out through some of these labs, and the tick comes back positive for Lyme disease, we always recommend then following up with your physician and getting treated right away.
But if I'm bit by a tick and the tick gives me Lyme disease, can they take my blood and say, Mr. Bowerly, you have Lyme disease?
Yeah, I mean, you would hope so.
Okay, no, I mean, I think it's because that, I mean, when you can, again, follow the science, if you can empirically prove something with a blood test, it shouldn't be even debatable.
But the problem is, it's not an accurate blood test. assessing your body's antibody response is not testing the bacterial response. So sometimes your body's not producing. Just think of COVID right now, right? How controversial the testing is. And, you know, some of the tests are accurate and some of the tests are not accurate. Lyme disease has been the same test for decades and decades and decades, testing antibodies. It's not an accurate test. So same thing. You think you have Lyme disease, you get bit by a tick with Lyme, you're mimicking the symptoms of Lyme, but then you get this negative test back. Well, then you're up a creek, basically. Doctors don't want to treat you then because they don't have that information. They're relying so heavily on that blood test that is decades old. And it's very frustrating on our end because we're trying so hard to want to educate the public and educate the physicians and the data and the research that follows it. And unfortunately, it's just not wanting to be, we don't want to be heard sometimes. And it's infuriating sometimes. So I appreciate it that you're always willing to talk to me every year so that we can kind of get our message out.
Yeah. I mean, I absolutely. Today may prove to be a kind of a shorter segment than I planned, but you know, I can always make it up to you. I'll try to be a better host.
Thank you.
Hold on, if you will. Rebecca Roll, Lyme, LymeWNY, Lyme disease. I think it's a real thing. I don't have any doubt in my mind it's a real thing. I'm not a doctor, but, you know, what do I know? But I have no doubt with the people I've spoken with that, yep, there is such a thing. Question is, how do you treat it? All right, or how do you get it recognized? We're talking with Rebecca Roll with Lyme, LymeWNY. David did a piece this morning on pests that drive you crazy, and some guy called in and talked about ticks, and I was actually going to do spiders, catch and release or not. I'm a catcher and releaser of spiders, God's creatures. I see no point in killing them. But anyway, Rebecca, as far as keeping Lyme disease carrying ticks off of ourselves and our children like to play in the grass. Grown-ups sometimes kneel down and garden and, you know, do work around the yard. What suggestions are there? What products are there that will actually keep ticks truly from infecting us? How do we minimize the risk, if you will?
Sure. So a couple of things that we typically recommend is you could go to some of these local companies and get your yard sprayed. That's something that my family does, and we've had very good success with that. One thing that we recommend for children, especially, I'm a teacher and I've actually been teaching my students about Lyme disease prevention, is using sprays such as Picaridin on your skin and Permethrin on your clothing. We typically in our house spray our shoes, our socks, and anything that we have kind of on our lower part of our body with the Permethrin. That's what we personally do. There's people who feel very strongly about soaking everything in Permethrin. It's very effective and works really well. We typically use a product called Ranger Ready. It's a really great product that we have been working with, and they've been working with us and really support our mission of preventing the disease. And there's definitely things you can do. I mean, and just simple tick checks. Simple tick checks. We always tell people, enjoy the outdoors. Love the outdoors. I love the outdoors. But just like you would go outside and you would put your sunscreen on, use your bug sprays and do your tick checks. My family is in a routine that every single day, whether it be summer, winter, spring, fall, we are still doing our tick checks. And I think that's a big misconception, too, is everybody thinks that this is the problem right now, that you need to worry about in the spring. It's a year-round problem. So always, we've had children and we've had adults who contracted Lyme disease in the middle of winter when it's a little bit of a more mild day.
So how many people in the seven counties of Western New York, your best estimate, how many people are affected by Lyme disease?
Oh, my gosh. Thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands. I can't tell you how many people that just know me have had Lyme disease or have had a tick bite or have had the bullseye rash, which I consider a kiss from God if you get the bullseye rash. I've lost count. I mean, I could have family and friends calling in that just people that know me personally that have ended up getting it since my husband had it in 2013.
Well, Rebecca, I don't know where the show is going to go in the next half hour, to be brutally honest with you, but I need to let you go now. I'll put a link up on the Bowerly WBEN Facebook page to Lyme WNY.
Oops. Hello?
Yeah, I said I don't know where the show's going to go here in the next half hour, but I will put a link up to Lyme WNY on Facebook so people can contact you for some more information about this particularly onerous situation.
Can I just say one thing, though? I want to kind of connect to what you said before I got on the phone. You said something about, you were talking about a lot about mothers. And I just want to say one thing, is that my mother and my parents taught me to never give up. And I wanted to say that before I hung up. And, you know, Lyme disease is something that could have destroyed our lives, and we've used it as something to educate. And my mom taught me growing up that you don't ever give up. And I think that's why we've been so vigilant with this and educating others. So I just wanted to add that before I hung up. So happy Mother's Day to everybody out there, and thank you to my mom.
Oh, well, swell of you to say, and thanks very much. Rebecca Roll, Lyme, WNY. I'll put a link up on our Facebook page on WBEN. All right, folks, I do not know what we're going to do in the next half hour. We may talk about pests like spiders and things like that. We may also talk with somebody involved in the lawsuit about schools. It's a fluid situation, and whatever works out, works out. And we'll see what happens. So your guess is as good as mine as to what the next half hour is going to bring on News Radio 930 WBEN. Might be straight news, might be fun. I don't know. Welcome, 537 at News Radio 930 WBEN. All right, so joining us right now, you might want to tell Tom Puckett that we have a guest relative to his big story. We have a temporary ruling by Judge Koliakovo about two districts, Orchard Park and Williamsville, that will be allowed to begin resuming in-person full-time learning in middle school and high school. And here to join us with more information on that is one of the plaintiffs in the case, Dana Hensley. Dana, thanks very much for being with us. I appreciate it very much. Dana, thanks very much for being with us. Appreciated.
Thanks so much. I'm glad to be here.
So tell us everything that you have been through today. Obviously, these things don't happen instantaneously. So walk us through your day today with respect to this ruling.
Well, this morning we logged on, or tried to log on rather, this morning at 9:30 for the court system. The initial live stream didn't work, which we kind of chuckled was kind of case in point that Zoom school is inferior. After that, we were able to watch our expert witness testify and be cross-examined, Dr. Tracy Hoag. She was the lead author for the CDC Wisconsin study on schools and COVID that was released at the end of January. She did an excellent job. She's very passionate, and we think that she really just showed that there is no scientific basis for 6 feet of distancing versus three.
No scientific basis for 6 feet of distancing instead of 3 feet of distancing. Is that exclusive to schools?
She is studying COVID spread within schools, and there is no data to support that 6 feet is safer than 3 feet anywhere.
Okay, a question that I must ask you, and I know it's a very easy answer, but this judge's decision applies to Orchard Park and Williamsville only. Why is that?
Right now, I believe that's because those are the cases in front of him. I'm not exactly sure what else this applies to.
Which district are you located in? How did you become involved in this situation as a plaintiff?
I'm in the Williamsville School District. I have four children. I have one in seventh grade. I have one in sixth grade who we ended up putting in private school because of the hybrid situation in Williamsville. And I have a third grader in Williamsville, and I have a four-year-old in private preschool.
I don't know if you can explain this, but why is this a temporary order?
It's a temporary order because the trial is not finished. The state questioned their witness today, and Orchard Park's attorney was able to cross, and the Williamsville attorney was able to do a portion of their cross-examination, but we were not able to. So the trial will finish on Monday.
So there's no guarantee, even in 2 weeks, that students are going to be going back for full-time instruction in middle and high school in Orchard Park or Williamsville.
That's true. The judge did reserve the right to change, to make an adjustment to his order between now and 10 days from now, which would be the 17th, so a week from this Monday.
Was the, let's see, the preponderance of evidence, who had to prove the case? Did you guys have to prove the case, the kids in school, full-time learning, was not a risk, or did the state have to prove that it was?
The state needed to prove that there's evidence for a rational basis for the guidance, and there is no evidence that there's a rational basis for their guidance of 6 feet. They don't have any data. They were asked, and they don't have any data.
You know, you're the second parent I've spoken with in less than 24 hours who took the child out of a public school and put the child in a private school because of full-time instructional availability?
Yes.
I mean, this is not uncommon. Do you know any other parents who've done this too? Not to get too far afield, but
yes, no, I have, and I know plenty of parents that have already begun the process of doing that for next year because they don't trust the public school system will be able to open full time in the fall.
Which I find ridiculous. We're talking with Dana Hensley, one of the plaintiffs in the case upon which Tom Puckett has been diligently reporting. Judge Koliakovo has issued a temporary decision that students, middle school and high school in Orchard Park and Williamsville, in 2 weeks should be going back to school for full-time instruction. No more of this hybrid nonsense in either Orchard Park or Williamsville. I should know this, but who is your lawyer on your side?
Todd Aldinger.
Okay, Todd Aldinger. Okay, well, we'll try to get a hold of Todd Aldinger. His phone number should be readily available to you, Pasquale. I should have it in my cell phone, but I'm otherwise preoccupied. Dana Hensley, I mean, would you consider yourself an activist parent, or are you someone who just got so fed up you were sucked into being an activist parent?
I've always been an involved parent. I've always been advocating for children's education and advocating for parents to be involved in their kids' education. I've been involved in wanting to have schools open since last July. I was a part of the Williamsville committee for reopening schools that took place over the summer. So I've been invested in this since the very beginning.
Dana Hensley, one of the plaintiffs. How many plaintiffs were there in total between the Orchard Park and Williamsville districts? You are one of them. How many others?
I believe there's 7 in the Williamsville suit. I'm not sure how many there are for Orchard Park.
Okay. Orchard Park, unknown. Okay. Hey, the one thing about Judge Koliakovo's decision that I'm not 100% sure I understand the logic behind is, as long as the rate of COVID transmission is less than 100 per 100,000 people, why is that the metric, and how does that make sense when we're talking about a subset of the population that is not particularly endangered by COVID?
So the judge didn't say that it had to be under 100. The rates have been declining very rapidly in Erie County. They went from, it was 184 cases per 100,000 as of May 1st. And as of today, I believe they're at 124 per 100,000 on a 7-day average.
Of course, I mean, that also the incidence of COVID is very reliant on the population you are testing. And for a while, I know the Erie County testing was reserved only for people who had symptoms. And by necessity, if you're only testing people who have symptoms, you're going to get a higher number than if you are testing the larger population as a whole.
That's correct, as far as test positivity goes.
And is that what we're looking at with this? I'm a little bit confused.
So we used to be going by test positivity rate in New York and in Erie County, and then it changed to how many cases per 100,000 residents. So test positivity is not a thing anymore as far as Erie County reports. There is still reporting of test positivity rates on the state COVID dashboard.
So we're talking about COVID cases.
Correct.
But are these COVID cases of asymptomatic people, COVID cases of people who are hospitalized? What exactly is the measurement?
It's anybody with a positive test.
If the statistics hold, and they generally do, for every 100 person who tests positive for COVID, if it's the general population, 60 to 80% of that 100 may very well be asymptomatic.
Right, yeah. There are people that do have the COVID infection that are completely asymptomatic.
One of the things that has, and I'm not anti-union at all. I'm actually pretty far from anti-union. Anybody who knows me understands that and knows who my friends are. But I've been very disappointed by the lack of proactive involvement by teachers' federations and by teachers' associations on behalf of those of you who are parents who are trying to get your kids back in school. I know that some individual teachers have been proactive, but the unions themselves seem hell-bent on keeping the schools closed. I'd like your thoughts.
Well, I think that you have to realize that teachers' unions, the AFT, UFT, NYSET, all of those, they're labor unions. Their interest is their members. Their interest is not the public. I mean, you could say the same thing about a police union. The police union's interests are about protecting their members. It's not about anything else.
But, okay, we have, I'm not trying to obviously pick a fight with you. I mean, you're a plaintiff in this matter. But teachers, like anybody else, have had access to the COVID vaccines, actually longer than I've had access to the COVID vaccines. So in that, anybody who has wanted a vaccine reasonably could have received the vaccine. On what basis could they possibly want to keep schools closed to protect their members?
I'm not really sure what else they're aiming for, and that's something that all of us are really kind of scratching our heads at. We're not sure what their end game is. Is it to leverage the situation in order to get better funding for schools? That's a possibility. However, the kids are being held hostage in the middle.
Well, and there's another angle to this, too. And again, not to get too far afield of this decision, but being in radio, I've seen what automation has done to the number of jobs in the radio industry. And at some point, one would think the teachers' unions would say to themselves, you know, if kids can learn remotely on a computer, there's not really that much of a demand for as many teachers as we now have. They may be lobbying themselves into a lesser membership.
That's true. That is something that Teachers for Open Schools have discussed, that they're going to be, you know, losing members, losing jobs. I think big tech and ed tech is a big part of this. You may or may not know that the former Department of Education chancellor for New York City schools, Richard Speranza, he resigned supposedly for personal issues, but he ended up being hired by the company that runs IXL, which is utilized in all of Williamsville Elementary Schools and in all of many, many school districts. It's an online platform for, you know, English, Spanish, math, all of those things.
All right. Hold on. Are you able to stick around with us?
Sure, yeah.
Dana Hensley is with us, and she's one of the plaintiffs, one of seven plaintiffs, as a Williamsville parent and also Orchard Park parents who have gotten together. They're trying to get their middle school and high school students back into full-time in-school learning. They have a temporary order in their favor from Judge Kaliakovo, which will kick in 2 weeks, subject to the restrictions we talked about earlier regarding the 100 positivity per 100,000 of population. Dana Hensley is going to continue talking with us on News Radio 930 WBEN, so don't go anywhere. Oh, Todd Aldinger, where are you? I know your phone number is in David Bellavia's phone, but I cannot hack into David's phone, so I can't get your phone number. But we're kind of running out of time, and that's okay. But Todd Aldinger, please call the WBEN newsroom. Todd Aldinger, thank you. We're talking right now with Dana Hensley, one of the Williamsville plaintiffs in this lawsuit with which Tom Puckett has been leading off his newscast over the past hour, and that is a temporary temporary order from Judge Koliakovo for two districts, Orchard Park and Williamsville, to reopen for full-time in-school learning for middle school and high school students in Orchard Park and Williamsville. The metric is 100 positive tests per 100,000 of the population. Can you just give us some more information on your medical doctor expert witness, Tracy Hoag, and exactly what argument she made that may have been very convincing to His Honor in this case?
Sure. So Tracy did the study in Wisconsin that followed a number of schools during a time period where the prevalence of COVID in the community was extremely high. It was upwards of 40% test positivity rate. That means that for every 100 people that went in to get a COVID test, 40% were positive. That's very high. They found that there was very minimal transmission within the school, and even going outside, like, masks were not worn during recess. I think only 50% of the schools that she studied had done any kind of update to their ventilation, and they were not necessarily opening windows all the time because it's Wisconsin and it was fall, winter, and it was cold. She just went through her own study. She went through other studies that have been done, like in Massachusetts. There was a study that followed schools that did 3 feet and schools that did 6 feet, and there was no difference of transmission levels among students between the two districts. And as a result of that study in Massachusetts, the governor of Massachusetts ordered all the schools back. So their K through 8 schools have all been back, and their secondary schools go back actually on May 17th.
Was any information or guidance given by the judge with respect to those idiotic partitions which do absolutely nothing, or masks?
What the judge said about those, the partitions were taken out of the guidance that New York State adopted from the CDC. So there were lots of schools that actually had purchased them that were utilizing them, and now suddenly they're out of compliance.
And how about the masks when your kid goes back to school, if that actually happens, because I'm sure there's going to be appeals no matter what, will they have to wear masks?
Yes, they will have to wear masks.
Even if they've been vaccinated?
I believe so, yeah. I mean, right now I think the only time you can take your mask off if you're vaccinated, according to the CDC, is if you're outside.
Just out of curiosity, you don't have to answer this, but as a parent, will you be having your children vaccinated if of age?
We will talk to our children's pediatrician, but right now I don't know that there is evidence that my children are at risk severe COVID disease.
Yeah, I mean, the evidence I've seen would say, as a rule, no, there will always be exceptions. But I'm not a doctor, and people should do their own thinking with their own doctors. Dana, I want to thank you very much for joining us on very short notice. On this radio station, we try to get people breaking news as fast as possible. And fortunately, we have a mutual friend in Tarja Parsonen, and I'm very grateful for your time.
Yes, thanks so much.
Thank you. And thanks to Tarja Parsonen for hooking us up with Dana. Tarja has a previous commitment, but, Dana did pretty well. I mean, let's face it. So thanks to Dana Hensley for joining us. And I wish we had more time, but it's already been 4 hours. And I'm inviting you, and we all are, on behalf of Pasquale Maggiore, to stand by for the WBEN Evening News with Tom Puckett.